That election and what happened after that was a real wake-up call for us.
We will never be unprepared for this again.
Twitter is rethinking some of its algorithms in an attempt to cut down on the spread of hate speech and false information.
And then working with our engineers and our content reviewers to build the tools to find that content and remove it.
Now Facebook apologizing, part of the Declaration of Independence being labeled as hate speech.
I want them shut down, I want them silenced, I want them muted. I think they are horrible for our society. We need to figure out how to stop it.
Why isn't it getting acknowledged? We watch our president talk badly about globalists, the media, international banks, and we know what that's code for.
We work with YouTube to get them to change their algorithms.
20-year-olds in their parents' basement tweeting offensive, racist, and anti-Semitic things at reporters.
An obligation to demote and or remove material that's provably false.
We work with Facebook on trying to use a redirect method.
Free speech and safety. And for most of its history, Facebook has said, we're going to prioritize free speech. Yeah. We're a neutral platform. People can do what they want.
When you talk about globalists, another phrase used by right-wing extremists.
Then they've seen what's happened. And over the last couple years, there's been this realization at Facebook, wait, we're not just a platform. We can actually cause real harm in society.
We work with Google on using AI to try to interrupt cyber hate before it happens.
As we've seen mass murder live streamed on Facebook, you can see why they would shift. Yeah. And there would be less free speech and more about promoting safety.
How sincere of a move is this? We just had the shooting. Is this reactive because people are upset right now, or is this a legitimate attempt to stop this sort of stuff?
Well, it's a good question as to why they waited this long, but
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He would like to see is Facebook make public a database containing the names of all people who've been banned and the reasons why.
A lot of people on the right say that this is censorship, to take people down, even though they are, you know, effectively over and over again railing against specific religions or people like that.
Launching a new war room so it can strike back. The goal, prevent another 2016.
When we decide, look, we're going to take this down, we don't think it has any business being on the internet.
You have no place on our platform.
In the last quarter, we've actually removed nearly 3 million posts for containing hate speech.
The quote around free speech wing of the Free Speech Party was never a mission of the company. It was a joke.
Not enough to just build powerful tools. We need to make sure that they're used for good, and we will.
We won't give a platform to violent conspiracy theorists on the App Store.
They're off Facebook and Instagram. Where are they going to go to next? Social media platforms pop up. Where are they going to influence people next?
The solution to 1984 is 1492. Join the true resistance. Red Ice TV.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're joining us live on YouTube or DLive, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you're tuning in, great to have you all with us here today for a kind of a special live broadcast. Most of the times, of course, we do pre-recorded kind of interview shows, but we're starting to pivot a little bit more towards making them live. So great of you if you're joining us live. Hope you're having a wonderful day. It's May the 28th already, moving fast into June. And we have with us today Markus Folin, the golden one, who joins us today to talk really about the European elections and also this absurd proposed rune ban that they're talking about now in Sweden. So we'll get to that a bit later. But welcome, Markus. Great to have you back again. Hope you and the family are doing well.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back. Pleasure to be on Red Ice as always. And yeah, the family is doing perfectly well. The little princess is fast asleep now, so yeah, she might wake up later, but hopefully she can stay asleep for this interview at least.
Nice. You getting any sleep?
Yeah, a bit less, I will admit, but it's all good. It's worth it. She's so unreasonably cute, so it's all good.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely worth it, ladies and gentlemen. Don't let anyone out there, the liberal media or the press, tell you that it's a waste of time or these selfish ideologies that they're pushing on young people these days, as you're well aware of, Markus, obviously. Absolutely absurd, yeah, to see it, you know.
Definitely. It's I thought it would be worse. I thought it would be much worse. It's like, yeah, a bit less sleep, but if you put it into context, it's not something bothersome at all. It's obviously it's nothing new to us, or nothing new to most of your listeners and viewers. There is an agenda that targets the creation of family. But then we can say that it's a very pleasurable thing to do. It's a very, very nice thing to do, to have a child to care for. So, yeah.
It's fantastic. It's the greatest thing.
To everyone who's thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah, and congratulations again, by the way. It's great.
Thank you.
Good people like yourselves are taking responsibility, you know, the future of the nation, and can we can keep it moving forward, you know. But anyway, let's switch over, Marcus, and actually get into a little bit. I want to get your take. I know you did a video on this already, too, in terms of the European elections and stuff like that. And many countries, of course, it's been very successful. Usually when it comes to European elections, the various nations are more prone to vote for nationalist parties due to the fact that many people in the Eurozone feel that they're not really represented by these Eurocrats, kind of this big monstrous bureaucracy, really, that we're working up against. So that's a really good clue, but in many countries it did actually very well. I was very pleased. Italy did very well. France did very well. Even Holland, even Sweden too, to a certain extent. What's your initial take and analysis on what we saw?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I wanted the alternative for Sweden, Alternativ för Sverige, to get as many votes as possible. Unfortunately, it didn't go so well, and the reason is, in my view at least, that the Swedish establishment media, they have learned their lesson from the success of the Sweden Democrats. So basically what they start doing 8 years ago or 9 years ago was continuously attacking the Sweden Democrats in the media, and it backfired because they only got the Sweden Democrats more attention, so more people got to become aware of them, of their politics. So that kind of helped in my view at least, their ascent to getting almost like a mainstream party. So if you said in 2010 that you voted for the Sweden Democrats, it was a fast way to become socially ostracized. But today, being a Sweden Democrat is not problematic in any sense, I would say, in certain parts, sure, but they have gone quite mainstream. And what the mainstream media did with Alternative for Sweden, which is a more hardline version with better people, I would say too, and concur. They also want to exit the EU. But what the media did was they gave no air at all. They gave no attention whatsoever. And yeah, that might have been bad for Alternative for Sweden. Who knows?
But I saw something about TV4. Was it Channel 4, TV4, were actually banning all ads that they were intending to put out?
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. And not only that, but they don't even report on it. So, for example, we had a rather big debate between Gustav Kasselstrand, the chairman for Alternative for Sweden, and Alexander Bard. And the fun thing here is that you have in America, you have America's Got Talent. I think it's sort of like a singing program where you have a jury. And in the Swedish version of that, Alexander Bard is a jury member and a quite popular jury member. And now he wanted to debate with Gustav Kasselstrand. So that was quite a big breakthrough in when it comes to who you're allowed to talk with, because it's been quite, as I said, a good way to get socially ostracized, to just talk with the wrong people. So that happened last Friday. It was a huge event. And the mainstream media didn't comment upon it at all.
Yeah, Bard is like as you said, like a cultural critic. He's been in a bunch of bands in the past. He's like a famous kind of guy. So it was surprising that he wanted to do this, because Kasselstrand has been kind of like a, you know, persona non grata. You don't really touch, the establishment hasn't touched him at all, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I was at the debate, and I, of course, didn't agree with bod in particularly much, but I have to tip my Pickelhaube to him because he went there. He was courageous enough to go there and to debate this right-wing extremist or whatever they label Gustav as. So yeah, that was a great victory for freedom of speech.
Well, by the way, now when I have you here, he seems very much, and this is kind of getting into the weeds really of you know, kind of Swedish politics and that too, but I think our audience will enjoy it nonetheless. Bard seems like he's basically just turned kind of like one of these technocrat, you know, guys. He believes in like artificial intelligence going to fix, even call it the promised land many times, like the singularity and robots is going to come. And therefore we have to have like an immigration policy, which kind of, we let in like the best minds. You know, we have to have people for Swedes to get anywhere in the future. We have to let in people from like China and India and like Malaysia or something like that to be able to pull the, you know, go in this direction virtually. Right.
Yeah. He has a very immature worldview, I would say.
Yeah.
He has this classic liberal worldview where the only thing he looks at the world as some sort of math equation where everything can be added up in numbers. It doesn't take biology into consideration at all. So, I mean, it would have been one thing if he wanted immigration from a high IQ nation, but he also talked about the population explosion of Africa and say, we have to accommodate to these Africans because they will be the future. And in his view, then there will come a lot of African rocket scientists to come and save Sweden, basically. So a very immature and insincere worldview. So I, yet again, I have great respect for him for taking this step to debate Gustav, especially at Jonas' channel as well. Jonas is a good friend of mine. But the things he's saying is quite ridiculous. And also one of my criticisms of him in his debate was he has this sort of very urban mindset that the city is where it's at. The city is what drives a nation. And it's like, how many times have you eaten today, Alexander Bard? Yeah, probably 3 or 4 times. You needed farmers living in the countryside to survive. How many times do you need a management consultant living in the city? Yeah, probably not so often, not so important for most people. But the countryside is literally what keeps us alive. So he has this sort of really unthought out worldview.
It's a classic, really, like kind of globalist and elitist attitude where, well, they're dumber on the countryside. You know,
exactly.
they just don't get it. These backwards people, they vote for like, you know, Sweden Democrats or Alternative for Sweden. If they just moved into the city, you know, got metrosexualized, it'd all be great, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. A very von Oben attitude, as we say in Sweden. Von Oben is like when you look down from above, and of course you can have an elitist mindset, but when it's so ridiculous, it just strikes me as a very immature worldview to look down upon the countryside and almost wishing for a separation between the city that is so enlightened and so prosperous and the backwaters in the countryside. So yeah, it's just a matter of realizing how many times you eat per day, and that's how many times you need farmers, basically. And if you want to believe that you can import everything, yeah, then we can pull out the environmentalist card. We can ask our Swedish friend Greta Thunberg to talk a bit about environmentalism and say that it's not sustainable to ship food halfway across the world to sustain an urban population. Now, of course, I'm not saying that Greta Thunberg is our friend, but she's a young girl from Sweden who's promoting environmentalism. So
you might get the Nobel Peace Prize, by the way. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, she's one of the only humans that can actually visually also see the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, by the way.
Yeah,
which is kind of interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So my hopes for her, to just briefly mention my thoughts on her, is that I hope many of these young people who are being affected by this environmentalist craze that is going on, that they start looking at similar topics. So the plastic pollution of the sea, single-use plastic, for example, hormonal pollution, such as the contraceptive pill in the water. So if she can push those people into becoming interested in all environmental aspects, I am more than happy. It's just that I think the global warming, it's a bit of a, shouldn't be a top priority when we have actual environmental issues at hand that we need to focus on, such as plastic pollution. But yeah, that's just my hopes for her. So I'm quite overall positive to her just because of the effect she can have if she, if the people she's influencing takes the next step.
The next step, exactly. Just channel that energy. I mean, it is a good concern. We know that they're, constantly kind of hijacking these issues, and they scare people into submission, basically, to accept these very kind of weird, solutions in terms of the climate and stuff like that. But it's been very interesting watching her, the way that they promoted her, and she's the daughter of a famous opera singer in Sweden. Her dad, I don't know too much about, but she has some kind of issue, right? Some kind of, I don't know if it was a mental issue. She had depression for many years. She didn't speak and stuff like that. And now they're kind of wheeling her out.
I think she has Asperger's. So sort of like autism.
There you go. Maybe that's why she can see the carbon dioxide.
Yeah, it might be something. Or that she has her mother there, Malena Ernman. She has been very vocal in the, open our hearts, open our homes. Of course, she doesn't accept any refugees in her own home, but she thoroughly believes that the Swedish people should accept more migrants. So yes, her mother has been a great proponent of the great replacement. But then again, who knows? Greta is only 16 years of age, I think, so she might analyze the situation further and decide that the overpopulation in Africa is catastrophic for the environment. Who knows? That's my hope, at least, that she takes those extra steps and that she brings people with her. Then of course, the minute she goes too far, the establishment will shut her down completely and stop giving her attention. Because right now she's the cuddle baby of the establishment. The minute she doesn't promote their worldview, she will fall from grace. So
yeah, definitely. It's been very interesting to see how, if she gets that prize, and I think they've groomed her so to speak thoroughly, though, so she won't probably step out of bounds kind of thing. I don't even know if she's, I don't think she's spoken on immigration, but as you said, her mom has. They're very much open borders policy, and we know, of course, that you can't have mass migration, open borders, kind of coupled with a concern for the climate, for environment, so it's a bad thing that it's happening, but I think we could direct the energy potentially in the right direction. We'll see what happens. It's interesting, but she's meeting all these people, all these world leaders. They're wheeling her out among all the establishment. It's just amazing. I just don't know. I don't get it. Like, it's fine, but I just don't get why she was picked, chosen.
Yeah, I think she has this sort of, she looks really young. She looks like a child, basically.
She does, yeah. But she's, 16?
Yeah, exactly. Then, of course, we do have another 16-year-old girl in Sweden. Doesn't look as young, but she is, Isabella Nilsson Jarvani, I think her name is. She's been holding speeches at the Yellow Vests demonstrations, etc. And her concern is, of course, the mass immigration, and she doesn't get any love from the establishment at all. But she's a good girl, at least. So Isabella, if you watch this, keep it up.
Keep fighting. Yeah, follow her on Twitter. She does a lot of good things. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's switch back a little bit to the EU elections and talk. We kind of analyze a little bit of the situation in Sweden. I don't know. Did you look into the progress of the Sweden Democrats overall? It was a story from The Local talking about how they actually scored big in the EU polls. They had some sexual scandal going on in the background of this, which I guess was an attempt to kind of knock him down a few pegs. But apparently that didn't work. So it's still kind of positive signs.
Yeah, exactly. I think they tried to time that to just halt the Sweden Democrat prospects at the last minute. But I think they got 15% or so, which isn't all too good, to be perfectly honest. during the autumn, before the election, they polled at like 25% or something like that. And then, of course, in the actual election, they got 17%. So they actually got less votes now than in the parliamentary election during the autumn. So I'm not overly happy. And then also something to keep in mind is that the Sweden Democrats become a bit softer in basically all issues, especially on the EU question. Before, they wanted to leave the EU, but now they have this sort of notions that they can reform the EU from the inside, which of course might be possible if all of these nationalists and populist parties from other bigger countries come into power.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look a little bit. Let me pull up the actual map here from the BBC, the election result map. Let me see here. Let me switch over to this source right here. Here we go, guys. European elections 2019. Now, I must confess that all these kind of group, it's basically, it is parties inside of the European Parliament, right? But they are consisting of people from the different parties in the nations that come to and join these parties, you know, so it could be a little confusing. Sometimes you don't know where kind of these kind of parties match up, what party they join inside of the European Parliament. But it was interesting to see that, you know, kind of the usual big players that usually gets a lot more votes, they were actually on the losing end. They were losing a lot of seats this time, like the Socialists and Democrats. They lost 38 seats. The center-right down 43. Right, so it's populist gained 6, right-wing nationalist 58, right? So that it's heading in the right direction. And I actually don't quite know what the others are. There might be some of our friends in there too. Independents maybe. Oh, they were down as minus 44. But what do you make of it? And are you well versed? Because my take on the whole EU election cycle is basically like this: that yes, it's great to have the European Parliament and whoop-de-doo, but the fact is we have something called the European Commission, where basically that holds all the power. There is an unelected president over the Commission. We don't have any say on that. It's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like the House of Lords in the UK. I don't know if it's comparable in terms of how they operate, obviously, but like you have a house that's like above a parliament, a commission that's above kind of the elected, democratically elected people and representatives. So the question is how much this actually influences things, and you know, there are certain things that has to be passed, of course, by the parliament, and luckily these parties can actually get in there and put a kind of a stick in the spoke, if you will. But what's your take on it and the breakdown of these various parties and how they scored up this time?
Yeah, so basically my overall reaction now a few days after the election is it's a step in the right direction. Of course, there are those who say it's too little, too late, and it won't change anything. I think that's a bit too pessimistic, and I think it's quite easy to always be negative. Then again, also, we need to be realistic. It's not going to change overnight anything in the European Parliament. But what we can view it as is if it's a battlefield taking place in a swamp or something, and everything is going really slow. It's hard to move. It's hard to get anything done, but we get reinforcement. We get to send in some heavy hitting knights into that, that slugfest in that swamp. So that's basically how I see it. We get more people who have Mother Europe as a first priority. They get to go into the parliament and keep up the good fight. And something else to keep in mind is that even if the nationalists and populists do not have enough votes or mandates to vote for a restriction of anything, it's still a lot of money and resources that are being available to anyone who is in the European Parliament and who is being within Brussels, so to speak. So our guys, or somewhat nationalist guys, if they can get a piece of that cake, it's all good, because that can be funneled into pro-European projects, whatever that might be. It might be some alternative media initiatives. So basically it's power and it's money and it's influence, and that power, money, influence is not only seen by the actual votes in the parliament, but it's also about, you know, networks and money and everything like that. So I am, I'm happy about the results for those reasons. So it's not that I think that Salvini will ride in on a white horse and save Europe in its entirety, but I will say that he can start steering the ship. Then, of course, when you steer a big ship, it takes a long time for it to actually turn around. But I think he can be a key player in facilitating that change. So, and also as two Swedish men talking about politics, we are quite used to our own politicians being quite insane. So just having an individual such as Salvini saying some of the things, if someone said that in Sweden, he would be branded as a far-right extremist. So, and then you have Salvini who says it. So it's a moral boost as well, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been great seeing his ascent, if you will, to influence in Italy. And now, of course, he's almost heading up and he's been declared, I mean, literally an enemy, like by Juncker and all these, you know, bureaucrats, basically. And they see that Salvini, together with Le Pen, that we can see here as well, is really heading up kind of a new direction, I think, for Europe. And Le Pen, of course, scored big as well. Macron, she outdid Macron. The Greens, apparently, what was the headline again? Le Pen defeats Macron amid green surge. So there is this kind of environmental angle that's starting now to kind of sneak in there and actually getting a lot of power as well, which is, as you said, at the end of that, they could be good if we can open those people's eyes. But basically, Salvini he's undergone all these like corruption investigations. There were three judges that tried to take him down, and most recently there was some other corruption investigation where one of his ministers were taken out, essentially that actually was very favorable towards his policies and stuff like that. So it's clear to me, Marcus, that they're definitely trying to take him out and make sure that he remains irrelevant, kind of moving forward. But so far they haven't succeeded. And so this might be the guy that very well kind of initiates that revolution that we need within the European Union.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, Viktor Orban has been a thorn at the side of the EU elite for quite a long time. But the difference between Italy and Hungary is that Italy is a key economy and a key player in European politics and economy. So if the leader for Italy starts being pro-European, and I mean pro-European bioculture and pro-Christianity and pro-Western civilization, that's a real issue for them. They can take Hungary with a bit more ease. They don't like Orban, but it's not as severe when Orban says something as when Salvini says it. So some really heavy reinforcements for our side of things, it's pulling in our general direction at least.
Exactly, it definitely is, and it has for some time. And of course, you're very well aware of this, but there is like a window of opportunity, really, demographically speaking, in terms of if we're going to be able to solve this situation politically and take back really power, from the globalists that have kind of ensnared us really in this situation. And to a certain extent, of course, we've allowed them to do this too. There's two parties here. We are equally guilty and they're guilty of manipulating and, you know, basically offering us a version of reality that hasn't come, obviously hasn't come true and it never was intended to. But so we have Salvini, we have Le Pen, you said Hungary, again, Netherlands, I have to look into a little bit more, but there are some a new party there that was on the rise, not the Geert Wilders. And the last few shows I've done, I forget the name of the party, but I'll look it up here in a moment.
Baudet.
Yeah, is that his name? The guy behind it?
Yeah, I think so. I was actually in Netherlands 2 weeks ago and we talked about him. So, yeah.
Does he seem interesting to you?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said something about the owl of Athena has spread her wings to something with Europe. So it sounded like something I could have said in one of his speeches. So yes, definitely an interesting guy.
All right. Yeah, I was looking for the story here as we were talking about that. I'll pull it up in a moment here. But then, of course, we have apparently the Vlaams Belang did pretty good too in Belgium, which is interesting.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
they made a monster scores, to quote a headline, and they have a really good young guy, Dries van Langenhove, a really solid guy who's very active and very, very popular. And yeah, my prediction is that he will be a force to be reckoned with in the future or even now. So yeah, they were very successful in the Flemish part of Belgium.
Yeah, exactly. The one that kind of really has a culture to speak of, considering the kind of the creation of Belgium. It's no, there's no accident, folks, that they placed the European Parliament in Brussels. You know, considering the shaky kind of nation history and the way that they divided up that, really. But again, the Flemish part is really, you know, has a really strong tradition. And I think it was, I actually had Vriz with me on the show, this a few years ago now, together with the other one, I forget his name. But they're doing really good. They're doing great work. And so that's very interesting to monitor. What else, what other countries did you kind of stood out to you? Because again, as I said, let's return to that point. There more people are more prone to vote for nationalist parties when it comes to EU elections, and then when there's the national vote, they actually pull back a little bit and they fall back into their kind of classic. But obviously, we have to talk about the UK, right? The Brexit Party and the total collapse of UKIP on top of it, with Sargon and all these people running in there. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's I didn't follow all of the drama about UKIP and Sargon and Nigel Farage, but suffice to say is that Nigel Farage was the man. He was the one who orchestrated it to a large extent, at least. And the voters agreed completely. He wanted to create his own thing, the Brexit Party. The voters, the first time they were, when they voted for the UKIP, they voted basically for him. And now he switched parties, so they voted for him a second time, basically. Yeah, it's a very individual-driven endeavor, I would say. And of course, Nigel Farage, I can't blame the British people. He's very charismatic.
Yeah, it's all him, right? I mean, again, the reason why UKIP lost out so much is not to go a little easy on Sargon, is not entirely his fault. I mean, obviously, we I don't know if you monitored that, but the media was just absurd in their accusations about this rape scandal that was going on. But they picked up on that point and they hammered it. And he put it down every time. It didn't matter. They just kept on doing it, and they obviously consequently destroyed the reputation of UKIP. And so I think most of the people, therefore, just flocked to Farage and the Brexit Party automatically. Plus, of course, a very unique situation in the UK, considering that they've actually voted to exit. And despite that, they're now participatory in an European election. And I think British history, there's never been a party launched 6 weeks prior to an election that ends up winning the election. I mean, and that's very interesting, Marcus. I want to reflect on that a little bit, because that means that, you know, this old inflexibility that existed in the political systems in Europe and in other parts of the world too, is kind of that's starting to transform. It's you know, boomers are kind of, you know, they're set in their ways in many regards, but even millennials and Zoomers too, obviously, they're like, a new party could show up and they might give the vote to them. It's more flexible. They're not like lifelong social democrats or something like that, right? So it could sway much faster in terms of the political solution, I think, in the coming decade here. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's actually one of my teachers when I went to high school or gymnasiet, he said that for old Swedish people, politics is religion.
Yeah,
and it kind of makes sense. Like especially for the Social Democrats, the Social Democratic Party, they had an amazingly strong influence in basically all institutions in Swedish society during the last century. So it wasn't only about a political party, it was also about, well, basically everything. And for many older people, to not vote for the Social Democrats is to be a traitor. It's to be a heretic. It's to be just a bad person. So they can't really do it, no matter if the Social Democrats do no longer have their interests at heart. So there is this religious fanaticism that goes into politics, that a lot of older people, they still have it, especially in the north of Sweden. But for each year these go away, then of course they're being replaced by other voters from Africa and the Middle East. But as you say, I do think we have a unique window of opportunity, demographically speaking, when everyone who's turning 18, all European young men at least, will obviously vote for a right-wing populist or nationalist party. Then the women is another story, of course, because they're more prone to voting in accord with what their teachers tell them to and the media tell them to. So it's, some good news and some bad news.
Yeah, both at the same time. And what do you think, what kind of signs does it send for the various national elections that are coming up? I don't even know which one is next up here. But it shows us that we're moving in that direction. There are, I guess there could be an election actually in the UK, considering Theresa May resigned. And, you know, they might not, you know, do that right away, but essentially that whole government depends on who gets in there, Boris Johnson or something like that. But that could kind of derail it a little bit. And then we had, which was the other country I was thinking about that had a potential for a snap election? Was it Austria after? Did you follow that little, the Ibiza scandal that they had there? The sting operation, the setup with them?
I saw it briefly, something with... he had to step down, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, let me pull it up here. Austria, so there was Hans Christian Strache, which is one of the right-wing kind of politicians, let me go to this angle here, who had basically taken part in a video. It was a meeting, essentially, with a woman, young woman, kind of attractive-looking woman who was claiming to be a Russian or something like that, and they were starting talking about deals. She was like shown an interest in buying a paper, I think was one of the things. And he was talking about campaign contributions and yada, yada. I would assume that this is sadly politics as usual everywhere. But this thing was actually a setup, a sting operation. So they secretly videotaped this. This was done in 2017. They were sitting on this for 2 years and now decided to release it ahead of the European elections. Very intentional, of course. They were exclusively leaked to two German papers. Many people felt it was actually the media itself that did the sting operation to set them up to kind of derail them. And so Austria might call snap elections right now because the other party with the younger guy, who seems kind of good on some things too, obviously, Sebastian Kurz, he went into a coalition with the, I forget, it's the ÖVP and then it's the Freedom Party. I confused the two, but, you know, the lesser party of that, which Hans Christian Strache belonged to, he ended up quitting, and so now they want them potentially out of the coalition. So that could kind of change the landscape. But a good lesson, I mean, to people have to look out for. Like, don't, obviously it was stupid. He even called it a sting operation. Like, oh, it was a honeypot. They set me up, and he even alluded to, like, some Israeli agent in there and stuff like that in the language. So who knows what actually happened there. But they managed to take much of the power out of the more right-leaning nationalist faction in Austria, sadly. All right, so yeah, I don't know. Do you have any comments on that?
Not other than to urge caution for everyone who is into right wing politics. It's not paranoid to say that people will be out to get you, so be careful with what you do. But other than that, I don't really have any take on that particular situation.
Let me just read this quickly, then just Google this. Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz ousted in no confidence vote. Motion backed by Social Democrat and far-right Freedom Party. That's right. That's where Strache was from. Follows sting scandal. Okay, so this has continued now. Austria's chancellor has been ousted in a no-confidence vote just a day after its center-right party enjoyed a triumphant night at the European elections after opposing politicians lost faith in his handling of a corruption scandal that engulfs a former far-right coalition partner. Austria will be governed by a technocratic administration. Well, that sounds good. Of experts and senior civilian servants until fresh elections scheduled for early September. How about that? So we got our answer. Wow, that's sad. That's not good at all, actually. Ibiza scandal. Yeah, look it up, because again, this is how our opposition will play the game. They will, you know, again, even if it wasn't an issue, they will create the situation and potentially entrap you into it if you're dumb enough, I guess, to go along with it, which is what he never should have done. But, you know, there you go. That's the times we live in now, you know, setups and stuff like that. All right, let's see here. What else can we talk? Any other things about the European election overall? Any something to go over before we switch over and talk a little bit about this absurd rune ban, Marcus?
I think we've covered the most important parts. Obviously, yeah, I was just going to mention Le Pen there. If this is obviously a result of Macron being an absolute tyrant, and I'm not saying that ironically or anything. If we look at how he has been dealing with the yellow vest situation, coming with some really really uncivilized comments. There was a 70-year-old something protester who got really badly injured, and his comment was something along the lines of hopefully she learned a lesson. I might have misremembered exactly what he said, but it was a really crude remark, and he's not a popular individual, and hopefully this can spell good news for the next election in France, whenever that is, might be 2021 or something. Yeah, of course, good news that Front National is going forward.
Yeah, the yellow vest has been very interesting to watch. That total travesty in the sense of how Macron has dealt with that situation. Apparently, they were in Brussels too to protest. That turned violent, and the police, of course, have been. It's funny how that works. How that all of a sudden, you know, this is, we're talking about nations that can't defend their own borders. It's just total mayhem and chaos internally. Many of them have suffering from rape epidemics, crime out of control, murders, terrorism. But then when the natives show up and do a little protesting, then it's just an army of police forces out, and they just bash the heads in of these people. It's just, that's anarcho-tyranny. That's what it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite typical in Sweden as well, where we have the police is constantly saying that they don't have the resources, but they do have all the resources in the world when it comes to putting down the wrong kind of the native population saying having their say. The resources are there. It's just not to keep regular citizens safe. So anarcho-tyranny at its worst, I would say.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so a lot of interesting things, trends to follow and trends to, you know, think positively about when it comes to the European elections and the fact that it's heading in the right direction. People are getting more and more sick and tired of the elites at the very top, the establishment, the globalists, really. Who are, you know, doing all these things to us. And of course, on top of that, you still have migration crisis issues that are ongoing. The European establishment still are trying to force different countries that don't want to have migrants onto those countries. So they're really pushing it. And there is actually, as I said earlier, there's actually an election coming up. So Juncker is going to be booted out, which is good because he's basically I think he's just a country. He's like our Boris Yeltsin, essentially. He's a drunk.
Yeah.
I mean, he can barely walk upstairs, and he grabs people's hairs and slaps. Yeah, you've seen some of the footage. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's like a parody. It's the face of clown world is that man. He is such a disgrace.
It's horrific, you know. But so luckily, he's going out. We're actually going to end the show tonight on a really good clip where he's putting down nationalists. So don't miss that at the end. It's a very important clip that we're going to play when he's talking about stupid nationalists and stuff like that too. But all right, let's switch over then, Marcus, and talk a little bit about this rune ban. Some people have said, well, this is exaggerated or this is fake news and stuff like that, but it actually is not. There's actually an investigation right now occurring within the Swedish parliament. It was specifically... was it Björn? What was his last name again? I forget it now. Who was behind?
Was it Morgan Johansson?
Oh, was it Morgan Johansson? Yeah, I already forget. Yeah, that's right. Morgan Johansson, Social Democrats, that is behind the initiative, where they're doing an investigation essentially and saying, what are these symbols? Who's using them? And because of who's using them, that's gonna, you know, we can't use them. We have to ban them. And it's not only certain letters of the actual runic or the Futhark alphabet, the Nordic alphabet, Old Norse alphabet, but also symbols and cultural artifacts, I guess you can really say, like the Mjolnir, the Thor's hammer, the Vegvisir, which is a very, kind of a compass type thing. And what else was one more that they were thinking about as well. But give me your hot take on this insanity, Marcus.
Yes, so basically, I have two takes. The first is something you have said on numerous occasions, and I have said on numerous occasions as well, is that if you want to dismantle a people, you have to cut off the roots, and then you will just fall for the wind. So that is the end game or the long game. And the perhaps a bit shorter strategy for this particular individual, again, from the Social Democratic Party, it's they are fighting an enemy. They're fighting windmills like the Spanish Don Quixote, because he needs to fight an enemy. He needs to uphold their narrative, and their narrative is that there are plenty of violent right-wing extremists who are a threat towards the tolerant liberal democracy, and they are taking measures to combat this threat. So he needs this particular Morgan Johansson, he needs this in order to reinforce his narrative of what he's doing. And then he's also trying to, of course, as all of these individuals, their virtue signaling to each other, saying, oh, you know what, I take the stance against these horrible right-wing extremists. I am the one who is the most dedicated in my struggle against right-wing populism. So it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't have to make any sense, because it's not about that. It's about him showing his potential supporters that he is very much committed to combat right-wing extremists. And then they're just picking something to make a battle out of it. So they're picking a fight over something that doesn't make sense, but it's not the symbols themselves necessarily. It's just that he wants to have that fight so he can show that he's committed to combating the surge of nationalism. So that's basically my my take on this this predicament.
Yeah, actually having the government's website up here while we're talking about this to see what they are actually saying. Now they're talking about racist symbols, which of course is it's much more than that. These are cultural, it's our heritage. These are things that you know, religious organizations are utilizing and using. And it's, as usual, it's one of these kind of guilt by associations that it, virtually I would assume then that we could let's use the hammer and the sickle as a symbol, create a new organization, and do go around and do a bunch of dumb stuff, essentially, right? And that would legitimize a ban, which doesn't even work. Now, obviously, I've seen, sadly, people were like, well, the Nordic Resistance Movement is using it, so that's essentially why, right? And interestingly enough, I do have to talk about that, because just a little while ago here, a few days ago, I think it's pressure from essentially the World Jewish Congress. They did release information, a video, especially about the Nordic Resistance Movement, and they put down a lot of the items in the video themselves and said most of that is fake. It's kind of it's out of context. It's not what happened, and these kinds of things. And then here is actually an article from their website. Let me pull that up too, where they're urging Sweden to ban the Nordic Resistance Movement. To enforce an increased protection of the Jewish community. Of course, this is very interesting, because you had consequently Stefan Löfven, our prime minister, speaking out actually after they issued these requests and said, yeah, we have to crack down on these groups. We have to make sure that everyone is safe, yada, yada, yada. So I think that that very well could be the full reasoning behind it. And so now another social democrat then is looking into this and saying, well, we need to ban the symbols that they're using. But again, that first of all, that's not going to do anything. And it's irrelevant which organizations is using it. It's their right, as anyone who's Nordic, or even non-Nordic for that matter, too. They can go ahead, use it, whatever. It's a cultural, not an artifact, I'm looking for the right word. It would be like going to Egypt or to Babylonia, Iraq or Iran even, or something like that, Persia, and banning like the cuneiform or Egyptian hieroglyphics or something like that, essentially, right?
Yeah, something that is so hilarious with this headline we see, it's that increased protection of Jewish community, and it's not ethnic Swedes who are harassing Jews in Sweden,
no,
to say the least. So maybe the World Jewish Congress could talk about the immigration of Muslims, maybe. So yes, this is obviously ridiculous as it gets. And also, of course, it's Morgan Johansson here and Stefan Löfven. They want to show to their masters or their sponsors, maybe, in the World Jewish Congress, that they are committed to enacting their will. So I don't think this is a coincidence either, that it's coming after the World Jewish Congress is putting on the pressure here.
No, exactly. And I kind of had this argument a little bit that in one way, I'm kind of glad that they're pushing so hard and so absurdly in this direction, frankly, because I think it's going to cause a lot of people to be very angry, shall we say, with the current political ruling party in power if they actually go through this. Now, it actually says, here's the PDF on this. I could pull that up, too. It's in Swedish, of course, but I can help translate here. It's essentially hets mot folkgrupp, which is the accusation, which is kind of like persecution of a specific group or an ethnicity or a race or something like that, which is the charge. And so they say bad groups have been using this, so we have to ban the symbols that they use. But I mean, with that logic, they could literally adopt the Magen David, the Star of David, or something next, and they continue their organization. And then would you have to ban that? It's ridiculous. But the mission to kind of do this investigation is going to be wrapped up on the 31st of May of this year. So we're going to actually get answers here soon, Marcus, in just a few days, 2-3 days away, in terms of what, if they actually are deciding. Now, obviously, I hope that the decision is, look, this is ridiculous. This is part of our cultural heritage and us as a people. It's our symbols. It belongs to us. It's irrelevant if they or we or anybody consider that a bad actor, according to their views, is using this or not, and that they drop this. But I think that there might be other... You're probably going to see something in between, not a full-on ban, but if it is used in the wrong context, or if you're, like, using it, if you're... You can just walk around with your, Mjolnir, Thor's hammer on you, or a symbol or something like that, but if you're part of a demonstration or something, then it's going to be a criminal offense or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's my thoughts exactly. It depends on who wears it, in what context, and in what time. And of course, if anyone decides to level charges against you. I think it will be something in between there. And something to keep in mind here also is that no immigrant, a 99.99% of all immigrants or non-Europeans in Sweden have absolutely no problem with a Hammer of Thor. They probably don't know what it is, and they probably don't care all too much either. So this is something from left-wing extremists, basically, high up in the institutions. And of course, World Jewish Congress here, they are the ones who have something against this. No regular immigrant is going to take offense at a Swedish guy wearing a Hammer of Thor.
No, exactly. And as you say, many gods, they don't actually know it. It's our own population, our own people, the hysterical liberals, leftists, progressives, Marxists, whatever you want to call it, globalists, that are hypersensitive and aware to these things. And I guess they assume that if we ban their symbols, they will just go away or something. I mean, it's just thrashing at the branches of a much deeper issue. Like, well, maybe you shouldn't like ruin our countries and like open the borders. That could help, to kind of ease off on. And same thing really applies in the situation with the European election as well, Marcus. It's like, oh my God, the far right is on the rise. But it's like, well, you're creating it. They're literally creating a reaction to something which is just rotten bad policies. And again, we know that it's not an accident, but to play dumb in the situation and just think that it's coming, for no reason whatsoever, one day just people rose up and like started voting for nationalist parties. That's just not the case. There's like zero self-examination in this picture, which is remarkable, really.
Yeah, definitely. And just as you say, these sort of things, these stupid things they come up with, it ultimately serves our purposes to a certain extent as well, because there are so many happy history-interested individuals who are only interested in maybe Nordic mythology or history or whatever, who's not politically in the least, but now they know that the politicians, and especially the Social Democrats in this example, are very, very ridiculous. So it serves as a wake-up call for those who haven't previously been perhaps politically active. So it could be the final straw for many individuals.
I hope it is.
These sort of ridiculous things.
And I hope it spells out to them clearly once and for all that they truly hate us. They truly, I mean, they hate themselves, many of them who are, again, of Swedish descent. But they truly resent who they are and what they're coming from, essentially. And it's as much, I think, as an attack and an eradication of things that remind them of these things as it is on the actual groups that they have declared their enemies, kind of thing. Now, the PDF here that the Swedish government released says, you know, again, essentially what we've gone through, that's going to, you know, all these bad groups are using it. You know, we have to have a discussion and kind of go through certain things when it comes to courts and different part of the Justice Department to kind of see whether or not this should be a criminal offense, a punishable offense, to wear or use these symbols. And so they're going to go through all this. And then they say that they're going to turn in kind of the decision to this here on the 31st of May, as I said, to kind of just make a decision whether or not the law should be changed. Now, we do, of course, have a foundation. It's not a constitution, but we have a foundational law, you know, in Sweden, which they claim is shouldn't be as easily changed, but it actually is. There's like hardly anything there that really protects it. But we should surely be able to take the religious, that this is an attack on religious symbols. This is, I mean, they would never ban the burqa or the niqab or you know, something like that in Sweden. But this is on par on that kind of same level of discrimination. But again, not against a foreign, a temporary visitor population. It's against the native population. That's what's so sick about this, Marcus.
Yeah, definitely. It's absurd in every way. An attack upon our history, an attack upon our spirituality. And the sad thing here is that the majority of the culprits are ethnic Swedes. That's just how it is. It's the majority of people who have, not only in regards to this, but in regards to the whole Swedish political experiment, whether it's about feminism or multiculturalism, sure, we have had influences from a certain tribe, etc., but the majority of things is still being done by ethnic Swedes who, for whatever reason, hate themselves to such an extent that they want to eradicate their own history. So it's, from a psychological perspective, really interesting to just think about how much you can hate your own people.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's just sickening watching this. But, you know, that's the times we live in now, and these are the kind of the battles that we have to fight to hang on to our heritage. And again, if there's no question what the agenda is at this stage, there's no question who they see as a problem, as an obstacle in the way of their little, you know, new world that they're creating and everything else. Now, I do want to plug your stuff here at the towards the end here. We're going to wrap up in a little bit. I'm not going to hold you too much longer. I do want to see if there was a couple of super chats that came in. So if you want to hang with me, Marcus, while we do that, and then we can plug some of your stuff, of course, and talk about your website, the current projects you have, and everything else. But let me just switch over here.
Yes.
I think we had a couple. Yeah, so white nationalist says, Henrik Palmgren is the king of white people. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Johannes von Volker, no message. Thank you. Darth Hypatia says, how likely are Swedish women to be lesbian compared to women of other European countries? Jeez. Do you have a hot take on them? I really don't know.
I don't think lesbians are all too common here, to be honest. But I have no clue, so I'm passing that question.
And people shouldn't. I mean, you might think they are. That's also one of those issues, right? You might, you know, visually like, well, oh, they have to be lesbian. No, they had a husband and two kids, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I have no clue. So.
I don't have a statistic on that, Darth Hypatia, but I'll look it up and I'll see if I can give you an answer to that. Andrew Howie says, in the UK, the voting report does not account for EU nationals. That's right. Somehow our BBC still quotes a turnout. Total nonsense. That's right. I did see that there was actually... so if you're like a, you know, Greek person or whatever, Swedish person living in the UK and you try to vote, they actually stopped that process. So other people that are EU citizens, not EU citizens, that doesn't make sense, but EU nationals, I guess they call it or something, they were not allowed to vote. And they just said, oh, I forget what the explanation was. It was something with it hadn't been processed in time or something. Did you see this too, Marcus?
No, I missed that.
I don't know why that was an issue. I know that people should be able to vote through mail and, you know, stuff like that. People who can't be in the country, and maybe there would have been more votes for the UKIPs, for the Brexit parties at that point. So that's interesting. So thank you for that, Andrew. CG says, fantastic new format. Red Eyes is the way people love watching YouTube and interacting with content producers, and a great channel. Ahead, full power. Thank you, CG. Appreciate that. Yeah, we'll try to do some more live, some of the shows that we record, you know, that we otherwise pre-record, just do them live anyway, so you guys can join in as well. We can have people join us in the chat. And of course, we're setting up that Riot server as well. So definitely the Friday show, we're going to take some calls through that. It's kind of like a, it's not Discord, because Discord has proven itself to be very hostile, shall we say, and they've handed out details. People have been doxxed and stuff like that. So Riot is kind of like an a different open source service, which is very similar. It does have some bugs, but look into it. I'll have the links down in the description. So we've set up three chat rooms, and one of those is a green room. So you guys can, you know, join in there if you want to join in live next Friday. We probably will bring that in into future shows like this as well. All right, Pamela Hudson says, hello everyone, just saying hello. Thank you, Pamela. Hi. Irish Wolf V5 says, hi, Henrik Marcus. Hope to see you at Amran again. Did you speak last year, Marcus?
Yes, exactly.
That's right. Last year. Yeah, so I was there this year. Sadly, I missed you. I haven't met you yet, so it was too bad. But yeah, it was good. It was the security I heard was as absurd that time as it was this time as well.
Yeah, I mean, they did their work. I didn't hear or see the protesters. I just heard later on that they had detained some protesters, but yeah, they did a really good job of that. And also, I will say that the American Renaissance, when I attended, really, really nice event. I really enjoyed coming over there. Nice hotel, nice venue. Yeah, definitely recommended.
Yeah, so, indeed. The park is great out there. It's good to be out in nature, not just like a big city. That's one thing I really like about it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's a very nice place. So yeah, and I thoroughly enjoyed my visit there.
Yeah, keep going, folks. It's important we have those conferences. It's one of the only ones left that stand after everything. I mean, the venue had a huge legal issue in terms of the security that they fought, and they won that luckily. So now that's kind of why they're so overboard and going so hard, I think, on that too. But again, you know, it does essentially protect two sides, and some farce like Charlottesville was avoided. Not that there was that many protests there, but you know what I'm saying. This issue of pushing one group into the arms of the other was not an issue there at all. We didn't even see them, you know, so that's good. All right, last couple of ones here, guys. Darth Hypatia again says, it is reverse psychology. They want you to obsess over runes and forget about immigration and stuff. Yeah, maybe that's true. I just think it's about that issue of deracinating people, of taking away the things that connects them to their roots and to their past. Ironically, though, I think that this very issue will actually get people to grasp on, Marcus, even harder, and actually become even more dedicated, like, oh, you know, the Streisand effect or whatever. What is it that they're trying to take away? We lost your video feed there. There we go. Yeah, what is it that they're trying to take away from us, and why are they doing that? And that might actually spur people to be much more, you know, prone to grab them. Can you hear me still? Oh, maybe not. Are we losing you, Marcus? Yeah, interesting. We might be. Okay, I'll check the message from you. If you want to join back into the call. I don't know if you can see this. Yeah, we can hear you still. I'll mute you in the meantime. All right. Let me do the last couple of ones here and see if he sends a message. Actually, there's one more left. Hell's Gate says, if they want my Volknut, they can take it from my cold, dead neck. That's absolutely right, Hellgate. That is what it is like. We have to fight. You know, we have to hold on to those signals. All right, Marcus, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Marcus? Can you hear me? No? Oh, darn. No? Okay. Darn it. I don't know if it's on my end or your end. Let me send you a message and see if we can get you. I can hang up on you and you can actually join back into the call. Let's go over to this one here, folks. One moment. And we'll just try to wrap up properly with Marcus. Yeah, I want him to plug his websites and stuff as well. So just stay right there. We'll be right back, guys.
Head on over to my YouTube channel, The Golden One, and subscribe, because I'm soon reaching 100,000 subscribers, so that would be cool if everyone would do that. And then also the usual social media. I have a page of my own, thegoldenone.se, and Twitter, Instagram, The Golden One, or at The Glorious Lion. same thing on Facebook. So yeah, I try to be active on all social media. So yes, if you want to hear some more takes about that, feel free to follow me on those platforms. So so yeah.
Awesome. And I know you can't hear me, Marcus, but we'll wrap up, okay? We'll say bye.
Yes, I suppose I will say farewell now. So thank you, Henrik. As always, a great pleasure. And keep up the good work. And we'll talk soon. And thank you for everyone who's been watching. Bye.
Awesome. Have a good one. Thank you, Marcus. Really appreciate it. All right, we'll wrap up there then. Let me mute him just in case. Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate that. It's great having you all here. Thank you for tuning in live, if you're watching it live or maybe later. You know, in the archives or whatever. Unfortunately, we had a little technical issues at the end, but that's what happens sometimes when you do it live. Thank you guys again, and thank you for the super chats as well. If you like what we guys do, definitely check out redicemembers.com, our members website. All our content that we've done back to our start in 2006 is right there for you guys. Over 1,700 entries. You get exclusive access to certain videos, and of course, the Weekend Warrior show that we do. Almost every weekend, a news roundup show, very much like Flashback Friday, but much more well-produced, actually. So definitely make sure you check that out. Great fun and very important show. All right, guys, check out as well, of course, the new t-shirts that we have out, lanaslama.com or redice.tv/store. Check out some of the new prints. We have a bunch of stuff there. That's a great way to support us as well. And as I said earlier, we're going to be back then with more tomorrow. Probably do another live show tomorrow about the EU elections. Going to bring some other people in from other countries. We have, hopefully, I think, people from Ireland, Germany, I think the UK, maybe France, and maybe Italy. There's a couple of people which is kind of up in the air so far regarding the time that we're going to start and stuff like that. So we'll see. What we can do. But look out for that tomorrow. Wednesday then, the 29th for that, doing that live. And then, of course, on Friday, as usual, Flashback Friday, we're going to be taking calls through the Riot app as well. So check the links to that down in the description below. We'll drop those in the chat on Friday as well. But make sure you set up an account on riot.im. That way you can join the green room and join in live if you so want to. But guys, we'll wrap up there. Thank you again so much for joining us. Thank you everyone out there. We'll be back soon with much more. Until then, take care, stay brave, and we'll see you guys soon.
The Euroskeptical right-wing forces seem to be very strong in many countries. How much does that concern you, and why do you think that is? What's wrong with the EU? What's wrong with Europe?
What is wrong with them? That would be the other way of putting the same question. What is wrong with those who are openly fighting against the European Union? These populist nationalists, stupid nationalists, they are in love with their own country. And they don't like the others. In some countries of the European Union, don't like those coming from far away. I do like those coming from far away. And in fact, I'm... Set.
As Africa's population doubles, a lot of them, whatever the circumstances, will be coming to Europe. As economic migrants or as refugees, they will be coming. And that is a good thing, because we will be senile. We'll be senescent demographically. We'll need their youthful energy to do stuff.
What's up? Money! Money! Money!
That's just what the economic statistics tell you and the demographic data demands, you know, and demography's destiny. Europe and Africa are going to have a very close 21st century. The question is, what kind of closeness will it be? And these kinds of investments through the aid program, but also into people's minds and ideas about, you know, who we are, gives less succor to the xenophobes and the populists who will otherwise do very well in the political climate over the next couple of decades if we don't get this right. And I think we should all be quite worried, frankly, if we don't make these investments. But to get people to think about the other differently.
Fuck white man, fuck white man.
Everyone's been asking, and it's finally back in stock. Red Ice merch is available in a variety of colors, prints, long sleeve and short sleeve for men, women, and children, including the Anglo-Saxon boar, Norse solar boat, they have to go back. Red Ice Eclipse, and something special for the little berserker or shield maiden in your family. All items were made with 100% organic cotton sewn in the USA. Organic cotton means cotton grown without the use of toxic pesticides and fertilizers. So add something new and comfy to your closet while also supporting Red Ice. Head over to redice.tv/store or lanaslama.com and click on the Red Ice banner. We appreciate all your support.